Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. Happy Aloha Friday. We are here today to discuss a film that we received from our PR friends. So we want to thank, well, Courtney today, also Erica, and of course April. The film is titled, and I hope I'm pronouncing this name, The Rape of Racy Taylor. I didn't want to say Racy Taylor because this is a film that is a social documentary. It exposes lots of things. We're going to have an interview today, director Nancy Bariski. Of course, we were going to have her on the show before. Unfortunately, I just couldn't quite get my side of the schedule together. She made a great film titled By Sidney Lumet. So I only say that because we have a lot of filmmakers who listen. That shows you the quality of director that we have. Anyone who can make a documentary about Sidney Lumet is a superb director. And this film is excellent as well. Let's see. Make sure we have our guests here. Welcome to Talking Pictures.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today? Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, of course. Of course. I just let the audience know, we of course won't talk about it, but I wanted to identify the quality of director and how thankful we are that you're joining us today, because we had tried before to schedule having you for By Sidney Lumet, and we have a lot of filmmaker listeners who just praise that film, so we just wanted to give the audience some context, and also a lot of us wanted to say thank you for making that film.
Thank you for having me here. I'm it's a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. No, we appreciate it. This film, obviously, so many issues that we could do a 5-hour podcast and still wouldn't cover it. So I had mentioned, you know, because I mean, this is about. I always say, when the director's on the air, let's have them tell us what the film is actually about.
This is a story of an African-American woman who was walking home from church on a warm September night in 1944 in Alabama, who was kidnapped by 6 white boys, dragged into a car, blindfolded, and taken to a pecan grove, and savagely raped for 4 or 5 hours that night. They tell her that if she speaks up, they're going to kill her, and she promises she won't. She just wants to go home and be with her baby. They leave her off on the side of the road, and the first thing she does is she accuses them. She speaks up loud and clear. She accuses her attackers. Her family accuses them as well, and they draw the attention of the NAACP in Montgomery. The Montgomery chapter of the NAACP has working for it Rosa Parks. She's the secretary there. She's also their chief rape investigator, because rapes were happening all the time. It was not unusual for a black woman to be pulled off from the side of the road and raped by white boys in Jim Crow South. So they form a committee. Rosa Parks comes down and interviews Racy Taylor, brings her to Montgomery after the first grand jury hearing, where no one is indicted, not to anybody's surprise, by the way. They form a committee called the Committee for Equal Justice for Mrs. Racy Taylor, and they commit themselves to putting pressure on the governor to get a second grand jury hearing. They write letters. They encourage newspapers to tell the story. White newspapers in those days were rarely telling these stories, but the black papers were. So between the black newspapers and the pressure that this committee was putting on the governor finally does have a second grand jury hearing, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the boys are not even indicted in the second grand jury hearing. But this is what justice was like for black women in the Jim Crow South in the 40s.
Now, given that, to set up my next question, I just need to know, how long ago did you create this film and edit it and all that?
Okay, so I came across the story in a book called At the Dark End of the Street by Daniel McGuire, and I immediately went down to Alabama with my colleagues to interview Recy Taylor and her brother, Robert Corbett, and her sister, Alma Daniels. That happened about 3 years ago. And then
okay, so,
I came back with the footage.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. What I meant was the reason why I needed to know the time was because this film is, anytime it comes out, it was going to be relevant historically. It was going to be relevant for more of us to learn about civil rights and all that good stuff. Not good stuff. Good stuff to learn. Did you have any idea, or how do you feel now that the times have made your film twice as relevant?
Well,
the current day news.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that this film has always felt relevant to me. I never questioned that we were talking about living history, or not even history, reality reconsidered. That, you know, I honestly believe that, you look through the lens of history and you discover so much about what's going on in the current day. And women are, have been treated very badly from the day of Recy Taylor right up through today, black women and white women. But who knew that we would find ourselves in an era where, powerful white men would be brought down by women speaking up against their abuse. It's achingly pertinent and timely, and I just want very much for people to acknowledge and recognize the role that someone like Recy Taylor played in the early 40s. What courage she had to speak up then, when her life was in danger and her family's safety was also at risk. I can't imagine anything braver.
I agree. And this film was, first of all, everyone, this film, you also want to know, opens theatrically this Friday in Los Angeles at the Lemley Santa Monica. And it opens the 15th in New York. And just quickly, where will that be playing in New York?
That'll be at the IFC Center.
Oh, that's right, the IFC Center. Okay.
That's right. That's right.
And
it might be worth mentioning also that we have a Facebook page, The Rape of Recy Taylor, so that other screenings that will come up, and there will be more, other venues, we will be detailing all of those on Facebook.
Okay, and so everyone knows, the Recy is just R-E-C-Y.
That's right.
And Taylor, the usual way, T-A-W-L-O-R.
Excuse me. It's T-A-Y-L-O-R.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I talk so fast sometimes. It's a bad habit I get from my dad that I just thank you for correcting me. I love anytime someone does. Like, some people have told me later, I'm sorry, Dad. I'm like, no, it's my dad talks 3,000 miles an hour. I literally work on it. Let's see. The other thing was, this film, as much as these documentaries, I'm mixed ethnicity. I have a Mexican mother and a white father. Often during when things are being talked about that have happened to Mexican people, I'll find myself saying, oh, stupid white man. I know it's not all stupid white men. I know this film in no way says all men rape or says all white people are bad. So as a director, how do you have such a multifaceted area of politics going on and not get preachy and not in any way come off like you're one of the Black Panthers making the film?
There's a very specific culture that we're talking about here, and we also talked about it in the Loving story. We're talking about white supremacy. We're talking about men who are committed to maintaining their status in society. We're also talking about the legacy of slavery, where white masters felt entitlement to sleep with their black female slaves, and if the slaves didn't consent, that they would rape them. And so there's a very definite culture and a kind of condoning of this behavior that comes that we see playing a role in stories like Recy Taylor's. And so in no way is it all white men. And in no way are we talking about all white men today who abuse women in various industries. You know, I don't think that we should generalize too much. I think it's our obligation to try to explain where this comes from and explain the legacy that's involved and the history that's involved so we can have a better understanding of it.
Well, I appreciate that. I think, we could do 20 podcasts today on what people aren't taking the time to just simply understand each other versus jumping the gun to get upset. Or I call it the theory of, I feel like today you can only talk about a social issue with someone you've known 15 years that will know you're not defending it or picking sides, that you're just simply saying, hey, what do you think about this? Do you have, I know she have a long list of credits. I've heard of some of those films. I can only go off of that I've seen by Sidney Lumet. For this, what I liked about this documentary was that, for my opinion as a viewer, it had a nice straight layer. It did have a nice subversive layer. It did have multiple layers and self-realization. So is that something that, I mean, obviously you have to be a giant Sidney Lumet fan to make a documentary about him. Is that one of the things that you probably adapt most from him, was that the multi-layers of film? Like, do you have a documentarian or a specific filmmaker that was guiding this film with how well you layered it?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know, there wasn't any one influence, but that's a really good question. I think that the story kind of told itself. The challenge in the story really was about focusing and embracing Recy Taylor's story, the drama of it, the poignancy of it, the somewhat tragic nature of it, though it does become uplifting at the end, and making that very... you know, being sensitive to that story, but also telling the bigger story, the broader story about the women who organized around Recy Taylor and how that led to the civil rights movement. And those are both revealing stories in our film. And so the real challenge was finding a way to weave those together and not make it feel like two separate films. So I think that one of the things that Sidney Lumet says is that every film defines itself, that you decide what that film is about emotionally, not in a plot sense, but emotionally, and you make decisions based on what you consider that film is about. And that's what I had to do with the Recy Taylor film. This is about Recy Taylor, but it's also about the larger, the bigger picture of the powering of the civil rights movement by women and organizations that are little known today. So, that's basically what influences the filmmaking choices.
Okay, I see. Yeah, because it was what I really loved about it was that there's, I'm not saying too many in a bad way. I'm saying I think any subject has where you can tell documentarians were just creating it because it's going to get a prime deal or they know someone's going to pick it up. I think there's too many documentaries about GMOs. I think there's too many documentaries about it started to be where there was too, like it was popular to make a PTSD documentary. What I loved about this was that even though it being a specific story and it leading to other things was that it did such a great job of, I was still completely interested when there were segments that I already knew the info, and not like when we watch a documentary about Dr. King and it says, okay, and then he went to Memphis for a garbage man strike and you go, okay, well now I know he's going to make a speech, then he's going to get killed. So I'll go make a sandwich. I'll come back and I just was really enthralled by no matter what it went over, that I was just kind of glued. I mean, I know I needed a glass of water. I even have a medical condition where I'm supposed to drink water and I didn't go and get water or hit pause. And I just finally hit the point where I was like, you know what, I have to pause it. And I hit pause and it said 5 minutes left. So I thought, okay, I've already missed where I'm supposed to be drinking water. So I really wanted to commend you for that, for the pacing. I didn't watch the credits to see if you also edited and shot and did all that, but just whether it was you or your team.
I have a very... my editor is Anthony Rapoli, and he and I work very closely together. I'm in the edit with him almost every day, so okay. it's a very kind of organic process for us. But everything that you've said is what I think is the goal of any filmmaker, to tell a story and to tell it with a certain kind of pacing and dramatic or narrative pulse that keeps you glued to that story. And so even the scenes where we're dealing with some things that are familiar, although I did kind of shy away from the most obvious civil rights scenes, the things that most people knew about, but those that we did show in this movie are all linked to Recy Taylor. And so what I think keeps you connected to the film is not the familiarity or the lack of that in the film. It's how it all weaves together and how you begin to realize that Recy Taylor is just the first link in a chain that goes all the way up through the civil rights movement and actually through to today. So that's kind of what my goal was, what our goal was. And, you know, if you felt glued to your seat, then obviously we were successful. I'm glad to hear it.
Oh, no, thank you. I mean, I was very, that's the only thing. And there's also been films that I love where, unfortunately, the phone rang, and when you're in a home office, there's no escaping that you have to go, oh no, you know, this, I've been waiting for 2 weeks for this call, and you don't want to take from the screener, but you know, you have to tend to it. What I'm just doing here real quick, and I have one last question for you that we ask every filmmaker, if I came to you and the script is in place and the budget's in place and schedules are great and you can do it, what is your dream genre to direct?
You know, that's such a good question. The genre is not the issue for me at all. It's the story. And also the means for telling the story, so that my documentaries tend to lean into narrative a bit. They tend to use narrative tools. They tend to have, the cinematography, the editing, all of that just tends to kind of go in that direction. And now I'm starting to lean into actually making narratives, and I bet that I will be using documentary tools in those. So it's a kind of... what's the best way to tell the story? That goes back to Sidney Lumet again. What's the story about? What's the best way to tell it? So I'm actually starting to turn my film Afternoon of a Fawn, which was about Tannekill LeClaire. That was a documentary that I made before by Sidney Lumet. That I'm turning that into a narrative film, and I'm looking forward to be able to kind of enhance that story using more narrative tools. So again, it's not about the genre so much as it is about the finding the right story, one that I'm passionate about, one that moves me, and then figuring out the best way to tell it. That's very exciting to me.
Oh, okay. I really like that answer, because sometimes we get a genre, sometimes we get, usually it's the cinematographers saying they'll explore anything. And then yesterday we usually do the reverse question where what would you not do? And someone said basically just if it was nothing that I wasn't passionate about. So I just wanted to mention your other films real quick before we let you go. If you want to plug that social media again real quick.
Sure. It's the Facebook page is The Rape of Recy Taylor. We do have a website called recytaylor.com. I think it's actually maybe therapeofrecytaylor.com. And we have Twitter and Instagram. So any of those social tools, we'd be thrilled to have people join.
Okay, and again,
talk about the earlier films too? Or
Oh, well, no, if you wanted to, I was going to read off your earlier films just so people can also check them out, because I know The Loving Story is available on Amazon. It is for rent. It'll come with your HBO subscription. Actually, one night I was going to watch this. I had it in my HBO trial, and then, of course, whenever you get a free trial, you get too busy to use it. And so it's funny that I was actually going to watch this, not knowing. And then, of course, we discussed by Sidney Lumet, which filmmakers out there, I will always push. He's the Dog Day Afternoon is the film that got me wanting to make films. So that's the only reason why I'm so talkative about Sidney Lumet. If there's any other film that you'd like to mention that you have out there released so we can get people knowing your work, that would be great.
Well, that would be wonderful. And the other film, as I mentioned, is Afternoon of a Fawn, that was made in between The Loving Story and by Sidney Lumet. And it's a film about a dancer who was married to George Balanchine and the muse to Balanchine and Jerome Robbins, and who was tragically stricken with polio at age 27 at the height of her career. And it's about how she reinvents her life and how she comes to understand her self-worth outside of the dance world and outside of the relationship that she has with these two giants of dance. And so in an interesting way, with the exception of by Sidney Lumet, The Loving Story, Afternoon of a Fawn, and the Rishi Taylor film are all pretty strongly feminist statements about women having either purposely or inadvertently speaking up and changing history in a way.
Well, that's available on Amazon Prime. And as you mentioned that, I have a better understanding now of truly how you could create by Sidney Lumet, because the underdog and also the talking up and also the standing up. I mean, what you just said made me think of Serpico. So it makes you sound like you're the filmmaking Serpico for women, you know, like that's a really awesome thought to me.
That's a great thing to say, because I have actually hadn't thought how closely connected Rishi Taylor's courage to speak up is connected to the people in the Sidney Lumet films, who not only Serpico and Dog Day Afternoon, but 12 Angry Men, where someone stands up for what he believes is right. And so his moral compass is a big part of his filmmaking in general. And I think that's what we're talking about in the Rishi Taylor film as well. Having the courage to go against, you know, a crowd, even if it's a criminal system. It's a very courageous, brave thing to do.
Yes, well, and I appreciate you doing it through films. Our favorite thing here at the show is to get someone who is coming on, or when we get to review a film that is about a social issue, so we can it kind of opens the door for us to not be to be open to everything, so we don't get. I wouldn't care. We're not censored, but I wouldn't ever want to be the Fox News hour of, oh, it's just political stuff. Yeah. So I love that when I get a film and I go, great, this can get me opening my mouth, and it wasn't me bringing up what I'm upset about. So we always appreciate the filmmakers with guts. And as always, thank you again for stopping by, and for your future films. Feel free to let PR know if anybody that comes on is welcome again. And we've done many films with the company that put us together. And in fact, the first film I covered was your other documentary. So this is a nice little circle to finally have.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you. Happy holidays, and you have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was a wonderful interview. I was so excited when I realized and made the connection that I was going to be interviewing Nancy Bieryski. Waited for over a year to do that. Like I always say, if you tell the universe that you want it and let go, I'm quoting Jim Carrey, let go of when it's going to happen and how it's going to come to pass, it will come to you. So I'm excited that we got to contribute today to discussing the civil rights movement. Again, check out The Rape of Rishi Taylor, coming to theaters this well, today, in Los Angeles at the Lemley Santa Monica. Again, for those of you, there's 7 different Lemley theaters. Go to the Lemley Santa Monica. And then next week, New York City friends, get out to the IFC Center. You guys do not want to miss this film. Thank you so much, and have a happy Aloha Friday.